living in Southern California, every once in a while, there's a weird fruit tree here or there that you encounter. Yeah. And in the first house that Gloria and I owned, this tiny little 700 square foot house, in the backyard there was a banana tree, right? There's actually four banana trees. Mm. Three of them were pretty small. One was a good size tree. Have you ever seen a banana tree, first of all, Brad, before I launch into this story?
I don't think I've ever seen a banana tree. Maybe like on a like going through Disney World where they take it through all those different ways to grow. There was probably a banana tree in there somewhere, but
maybe, yeah. They're vaguely palm-like. Is what? Just imagine a smooth-sided palm tree, basically.
Is okay, it, that's kind of what I've got in my head.
Yeah, yeah. It's a rough and ready version of what a banana tree is. Anyway, I've been living there for about a year and a half and reading all these things about how to nurture a banana tree to get growing and how to get it moving and how, because it wasn't producing any bananas.
Oh, sure.
And then all of a sudden, this gigantic, like, Feed Me Seymour type flower pod thing comes bursting out one spring.
Ooh.
And I get a gigantic banana bunch. I mean, literally like 150 bananas, whatever it was.
Wow.
On this one bunch.
And they're all ripening at the same time?
Oh, yeah. It's like an all or nothing plant. It's like, wow. Here I go. Here they go.
And literally where you get the phrase going bananas.
Thanks for listening to Comic Lab, everybody. All of a sudden I have this gigantic banana bunch coming out of this tree and yeah. They're ripening. And yeah. I noticed that squirrels are starting to get at the bananas. I'm like, well, they must be ready. If the squirrels are going after them, then they must be ready.
Right.
So I get out my machete, which I had only used to date about three times. I get out my machete, and I had a hand on the bunch, and I slice the bunch of bananas, right? Yeah. And now this speaks to my ego that I thought that my left arm would be strong enough to hold up a whole bunch of bananas.
Oh,
both I and the bunch of bananas go ass over tea kettle backwards because the bananas weigh, 150 pounds. And if you try to hold that outright in your arm. Anyway, I go knocking over and then water starts pouring all over me because when you slice a banana tree, the water pressure is such that it squirts out like a hose. It's like,
oh, really?
There's so much water stored in this tree. And so I'm like, oh, cool, banana water. I'm going to taste it.
Oh, cool, banana water.
Now, here's where I went wrong, Brad. Somehow, like Tom and Jerry cartoons taught me that when you cut a cactus and there's water, you just drink the cactus water, right? Like
you cut a coconut, you drink the inside of that. This is all nature's soft drinks.
Right, and if there's one thing people know from my story about me swimming with turtles in Hawaii, Dave Kellett knows nature. I mean,
absolutely.
If there's one thing that I'm great with, it's nature. Anyway, this gushing fire hose of water is coming out of this banana tree, and I'm like, oh, it's nature's tap water. Oh. I'm going to have a sip.
Yeah.
And I put my full mouth up to this water spout and like, look, look, look. And, okay, I can't explain this any more than to describe. Have you ever bitten into a truly unripe banana? So unripe that it like instantly dries your mouth out.
Oh, that starchy, yeah. You can't even swallow almost.
Yes. It's starchy and it's I don't know if astringent is the word, but like the opposite of acidic. It's basic, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like, da, it hurts your mouth. This water was that taken to the 10th level to the point that I'm running across the yard. My wife is like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, my tongue was like, wasn't working. I grabbed the garden hose and I just sit under the garden hose for like 10 minutes going, just slurping out my mouth.
Oh my gosh.
And then I did a bunch of reading on it afterward, and people were like, yeah, you can drink banana water. We don't recommend it, but if you're dying in a jungle somewhere, you can drink banana water.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, here's Dave Kellett with his machete going, I'm going to drink banana water. This is going to be amazing.
You look it up in the Boy Scout guide, and it's the one time they use the phrase, only a total idiot would do this.
It's like the prelude sentence is, if you're dying, maybe go for it. Otherwise, don't drink banana water.
If the only alternative is straight up salt water, you can hit the banana water.
So the one thing we're learning in this podcast, Brad, time and time again, if you need a nature guide, if you're going out somewhere, Brad, in nature, and you need somebody to take you through it, look no further than Dave Kellett. I'm your man, Brad.
You're a regular Steve Irwin over there.
I really am. So on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We got a big week, a packed show of questions this week. And but before we jump into it, I want to say a big shout out and a thank you to our sponsor, Wacom, at WACOM.com, makers of the new Wacom One, and of course also the Cintiq line and the Intuos line. But that new Wacom One, Bradley Geiger.
Loving the Wacom One. We've said it so many times, but I've been doing a lot of work in the house as opposed to in the studio, and it's just such a beautiful experience. I want to talk just for a second about the stylus of the Wacom One.
Yes.
Because it's a little bit different than the typical Wacom stylus, which tends to be a little thicker. Mm-hmm. This one's a little thinner, and I wasn't sure I was going to like it just because it's different and I don't trust different things all the time. I'm kind of set in my ways. Man, I'm telling you, you start working with this Wacom One stylus, and it really is just a smooth, beautiful, responsive experience that I was joyfully surprised at how well it worked. It was something that I really have kind of taken to almost preferring at this point.
Yeah, it's funny how... You think you were, for me, you and I both have the Wacom Pros as well. And those pens are gorgeous. But it's funny how Wacom does a really nice job designing those for the moment of the machine that you're using it for. So the Wacom One being more portable, mm-hmm. I don't know if this is going to make sense. That pen fits the mood and the positions and the angles that you're going to hold a pen in a more laptop-y type, not laptop-y, lap presentable angle. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so that stylus works perfect for that. But anyway, so a huge thank you and a shout out to our sponsors, Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the Wacom One. And Brad, I'm going to jump right into our first question for the week.
This comes in
from Alexi Bradley. And Alexi asks, you have both often said to write characters as people. Mm-hmm. How do you, as writers, incorporate the difficulties that character would experience in life into your stories? For example, if your character is a woman, how do they experience sexism in your world and still be faithful to the plot and themes of the story? Or do you avoid writing things like that? Essentially, how do you empathize with what that character would experience in real life when you are writing them into a story?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm kind of glad that we're discussing this, because really empathy is kind of it's an important concept that I think just on a world level, a little bit more empathy would be a great thing.
Agreed.
If everyone would spend a little bit of time thinking about what it's like to live in somebody else's shoes. And that really is it. And part of that is, for me, making sure that, like, I'm keeping my social media, for example, open, so that I've got some of those other voices in, and I don't shut them out immediately when cognitive dissonance jumps in, and it's like, oh, this person's saying something different than my experience, you know, and it's really, really easy to shut that out. Part of it is been trying to kind of cultivate a social media where I'm hearing from some of those different voices and hearing about experiences that aren't my personal experiences. That I found out has been a good first step. How about you, Dave? How do you reach empathy in a comics writing situation?
Well, I think a broader picture thing to recognize is that the comics and art in general work best when people can write to their own story and write to their strengths. And so having people of color, having women, having LGBTQ people writing their own stories is inarguably the most powerful and effective and personal and intimate type storytelling that we can have. And for that, we should all be working towards buying, supporting, elevating, lifting up voices that traditionally Marvel, DC didn't include in comics. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. By numbers that we would in any way consider equal or fair. And that is the best way to do it. I think inarguably that is the best way to do it. But for someone like Brad or I, empathy as a writer is basically saying that all of us as humans have the ability to, on some level, because God, if this isn't the case, then we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. In some level, imagine ourselves in someone else's shoes. And the basic nature of empathy is saying, I will do better for this person because I can imagine how tricky it is for them in this moment. Right. It's what we do in giving donations to charity. We're imagining, you know what I mean? The empathy is, and also the care for fellow humans is driving us to give because we can see ourselves in those shoes. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I personally, Brad, avoid stories that are tricky enough in the sense that I don't want to be stealing someone's stories from communities that are marginalized and not allowed in comics traditionally as they should have been. And so it's a tricky dance because you want to elevate and lift up those voices, but at the same time, you also want to be able to include as many perspectives and angles in your stories as well. But it's at this moment in history, for me anyway, it's a dance because I also don't want to steal stories or try to say, oh, I can tell that story, when I know in my heart of hearts that I can't. I can't speak to the truth of that lived experience in a way that somebody else can. So the best I can do is write characters as humans, write the fullness of them, recognize that each character is a full and complete human with a full and complete story that is valued by them and should be valued by us.
Right.
And for all their flaws and high points. You know what I mean, Brad? We're avoiding caricature, avoiding shorthands that are cheapening in any way.
Stereotypes.
Stereotype. But it's a, what do you see what I'm saying, though, in terms of not stealing a story from a community that is not my own and that I can't speak to with personal experience?
Yeah, it's a difference between having a diverse cast and that you can base your storytelling on and trying to tell the story of that one experience that you might not necessarily have. Those are kind of two different things, right? And also, like, the other thing that I keep coming back to as well is not to fall into that trap that makes you think, well, this is, you know, this one person needs to represent the entire multitude of this group of people. Like, there is no one brain for any group of people. If you take a look at any group, you're going to have people that run the full spectrum of all kinds of different personalities and beliefs. And there is no person that's going to be representative of one group. Mm-hmm. So it's so much better to try to write that person as an individual, as a character, as somebody who has their own unique set of influences than it is to say, okay, this is going to be my character that represents this whole community. That's when you get into that, I think sometimes you might start making some decisions that are a little bit fall into what you're talking about in terms of caricature.
And I will say this, and people might know this from Drive, is that because I'm currently doing a book club with my family and friends. Mm-hmm. And they were like, all right, what's our next book choice? And my one request was nothing with feelings. I don't want anything with feelings. I want an adventure story, a sci-fi story, a fantasy story. I don't want anything with feelings.
Yeah, no.
And because, Brad, it's and this speaks to both my strength as a storyteller and my weakness as a storyteller. Mm-hmm. I like, for lack of a better description, macro stories, not micro stories.
Yes.
Like Drive is a macro story. It's for the most part, it's telling big chess piece moves across a broad empire. It's not talking about, I looked out the window wistfully and felt, you know, the deep turning of sadness in my heart.
Yeah.
Mine are not stories about feelings. And so I'm saying that because to admit in this moment that I don't tend to write personal stories of any characters of mine. My characters are there to, I guess if I'm being honest about it, my characters are there to serve the story, not my story is there to serve the characters, mm-hmm. which, like a Restoration novel, the story is there to serve the characters, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or a Jane Austen novel, the stories are there to serve the characters, not the other way around.
Right.
I am not, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not the best cartoonist to talk about writing empathetic, or writing in an empathetic way, characters, because for the most part, I'm, as a writer, mainly interested in macro stories. And how do you feel about that? Do you find yourself writing more macro stories?
No. Well, yeah. And also, I mean, most of our writing is either straight up like a macro science fiction type story, Or it's just humor, where it's not necessarily right. about the personalities. It's about making the joke get across, making right. the gag right. work, right. Or making that humorous moment come across.
Yeah.
This might be one that there. I guarantee you, there's better sources of information than you and me on this particular topic.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. Is that this one is. I think in general, the best thing to do, as always, is to write characters as people, as full, complete, non-caricatured characters mm-hmm. With their own hopes and desires and fears. But that being said, I think this is Brad and I admitting that we are not the best ones to talk about
yeah.
the macro movements of characters and how best to serve them when we kind of focus on macro stories. Mm-hmm. That's a big waving of the white flag on our part, Brad, that we...
Boy, we came right out of the gate with a complete surrender. Well, let's see if we can do a little bit better with this person's question. They say, I was drawing a short 6-page comic over the weekend, and I was really excited about it at the start. I eventually spanned across 2 weeks, and the longer it took to finish it, the less excited I was each time I opened up the file. Eventually, it got to the point where I started to doubt myself. Is this comic really as good as I first thought? If this is happening in a short 6-pager, it's going to be so much worse for me on graphic novel length comics. What are your thoughts on keeping that initial excitement for the comic there as you work to finish it? Is the solution just work to finish it faster? What do you think, Dave? How do you keep from losing interest in a project?
That is a great one. I will answer it this way, is that it's a little bit like, you know, Brad, when someone says, you know, when a preteen or teen says, like, what's it like falling in love? Uh-huh. Or what's it like being in romance like? That kind of thing. Uh-huh. And adults always cliched way say, oh, you'll know it when you know it, or you'll know yep. it when you feel it, or you yep. know it when you see it. And it's kind of true with stories that captivate your heart, like, you'll know that it's got you when you can't put it down or you can't walk away from it. Now, are there down days for me with like Drive, you know, where I'm like, I don't want to write today. I don't want to do that. Of course. But if you asked me, Dave, if I could give you $100,000 to walk away and not finish Drive, would you take it? And I might say no. I would say no. Because I want to finish that story. Yeah. It's really important to me to finish that story. I love that story. I'm interested in that story. I got to finish that story, you know?
Yeah.
What I'm getting at there is that if the interest is already waning, it's a version of what we said before with your writing, that if you're bored, they're bored.
Yes.
And so if you're bored after 6 pages or 2 weeks of working on it, I guarantee you the audience is going to be bored by it. And this is your editorial eye saying, let's go on to a different topic. And so for me, the solution is generate more ideas, because out of 100 good ideas, you'll get a good one. And if for those of you that have listened in on Writer's Room, you'll see Brad and I pitch out 20, 30, 40, 50 ideas to finally yes. land on a good one. And this might be your brain's way of saying, maybe there's something here, but it's not fully developed. Brad, what do you think?
I'm going to take a little bit different tact on this one than you did, because okay. I thought when you started talking relationships, I thought we were going to look at this exactly the same way. And you kind of went another way. For me, something even as short as a 6-page comic or one single comic strip is kind of like a romantic relationship. Okay. For example, when my wife first met me, she was smitten, right? She stars in her eyes, okay? Couldn't get enough of this guy right here.
Sure.
We've been married for, oh golly, you know, well over 20 years now. And we've dated for a long time before that. We've been together for a long time. I guarantee you, somewhere in the middle, those stars didn't twinkle quite as bright. But it wasn't, she didn't, well, if she did, she never told me. She never said, well, maybe I'm kind of done with this person. Because during those moments, that's when you say, but wait a minute, even though I'm not having that intense feeling for Brad right now, doesn't mean that I stopped liking him. It's just that I'm in this different place. And then you get to, as your relationship matures, you get to a different feeling of love. And do the stars come out in her eyes every day she sees me? No. Are they still there? Yes. Right? That's what a comic is like. When you first get that idea, you're smitten with the idea. You're all, it's that honeymoon period. This is a great idea. I can't wait. Then the work begins.
Oh, which is, I see what you're
which
saying.
Which is kind of like, you know, when you move in together and you start having kids and now you're
and the
you're
bills are
up.
A little bit coming fast and
now
furious.
Now the bills are coming. Now there's, you know, there's all this stuff and maybe
it's
maybe
not
once,
just ice cream dates and walks on the pier anymore, you know, that
and,
kind of thing.
And maybe once in a while you think that you should buy the new couch and she thinks that you should get a TV, or you know, sometimes you there's conflict, right? Doesn't mean that you stop loving each other. It's just that you're in a different phase of the relationship right now.
You know what? I'm going to step back and say your answer is probably the better one from a technical comics creation standpoint, and it's one that I didn't even consider. So I thank you for pointing that out to me because you're right. That what's happened is you've gone, to keep on the romance theme, you've gone from the, oh my gosh, blue skies, look at this, this idea. It's like a beam of light. Oh, it's amazing. Everything is sunshine and roses, right? And then the work comes and you're like, oh, this dialogue's not working. Oh, this pacing's not working. I don't want any of this. And you kind of shove it off the side of the desk, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And you're right. There is that aspect to any kind of storytelling.
Yes.
And I didn't consider that. To me, it was more of like, if it is boring you, which is a word that they chose.
Yeah.
Then that is, at 2 weeks, that's a bad sign.
Right.
But you're right to interpret it that maybe the boredom is a misapplication of what is actually work. Like now you are working. It's not just I want to build a rocket ship. Now you got to figure out how to get the thrust going and how to do all that. You know?
Yeah, building a exactly. Building a rocket ship is fun. Tightening the screws on every little part of it is not fun, right?
Right.
But that's the part that makes it go up in the air. And it's the same thing with a relationship. As that relationship matures, you get into different zones, and some of them are, you know, like any married couple will tell you, some of them take a little bit of work and aren't so fun. Doesn't mean she stopped loving me, right? It just means that we're in a different zone right now. And just to tie this all up, Dorothy Parker had a wonderful quote that I always remember, especially when I'm in the end phases of inking. Dorothy said, "I hate writing. I love having written."
Yes. Yeah. It is an amazing quote.
And I always get to that point just as I'm doing the final touches, doing maybe some sound effects and some lettering and the very end of the inking that last panel of a page particularly. I always think about that quote because we all get to that point. But you know that right around the corner, here's what I'm going to tell you about your sixth pager. You're going to get to that last panel of that sixth page, and it's going to be work, right? It's going to be, you need to, and here's another relationship word, make a commitment to finishing that project. Even though you don't have stars in your eyes right now, you've made a commitment. You've got to follow that through. Good things happen to people that follow through those commitments. I'm telling you stick with it. Then you get to the point where you finish it, you release it out into the world, you've got that sense of pride, and now you get to the part of you love, as Dorothy Parker did, having written, or you love having cartooned in your case. Now you can share it with everybody, and that's your reward for sticking through all those tough points in the middle where you didn't have stars in your eyes, but you kept with it, you kept your commitment, you put it out, and this is your reward. You got something to share with people. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I like your angle on this so much better than mine in terms of the relationship angle that you took with it. Because, like, for example, continuing Brad's story technique, let's say you're Brad's wife and you had initially signed up for the sparkles were there, the glow, everything. You're sharing cheesesteaks on a summer night in Philadelphia, right? And that now you got to sign up for the commitment and you're like, again with this T-shirt in quarantine, you know, oh my God, really? We're sticking with the Van Dyke? All right.
Yeah,
well, then I guess.
Yeah. That moment of hope. Oh, Dave mentioned beard product. Maybe he'll finally put some product in his beard. And no, you know what? It's still not happening.
Bounced right off him. Didn't even
put up with this face.
Maybe he realizes that Dave brought that up because I had emailed Dave hoping that he would he would try it.
She says, boy, you cannot take a hint, can you? And no, I can't.
But I want to, okay, so let me, I do want to ask you a follow-up because I actually do like your answer better than mine. Mine was too quick to like, burn it all down. You don't like the story anymore. Burn it down. Your answer was better because you took a more process-oriented look at it, which is like, no, you are at the stage that's not fun. The idea and the spark is fun. The getting in the trenches is not fun. The finishing panel is fun. You know, that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so with the idea that this is a process question and they are in the trenches, I want to ask you, Brad.
Yeah.
How do you, Brad Geiger, distinguish if you're on page 5 of a short story and you're suddenly bored with the process? How do you distinguish when you were bored with the process versus bored with the story? And I think that's a good follow-up.
That's a toughie. That's a real toughie. And there's no way to... So here's the deal. When you're on page 5, it's impossible to tell whether you're bored with the story. You just you don't have the distance yet. You've got you got that far. You've got to put your head down and push and do whatever it takes for you to get to the end of the last panel on page 6. Now, for me, sometimes that's like, oh, I need to draw a better panel here. I'm drawing talking heads. I've got to switch up the angle. I've got to find another. I've got to give myself a drawing challenge. I've talked about that on previous shows. I like I said, when I do After Dark, it's a much bigger drawing challenge. And I find that I really groove on that. I like that drawing challenge. So if I'm in that situation on a page 5 of a graphic novel that's 6 pages, I'm going to find some challenges for myself in there that I can sink my teeth into, because I know that's a good trick to get me back into the swing and get working on that, on finishing that. But how do you know if it's not, you're bored with the story? You can't know. What you can do is this. You finish what you started, you get in there, you put your head down, you keep going. You'll know if you're bored with the story in a couple weeks after you get done with that page 6.
Yeah.
Then you can tell whether you're bored with it. Then you can really step back. And okay, so what does that do for this person's question about doing a bigger graphic novel? Well, listen, the graphic novel is going to be chopped up into chapters. You're not just going to do one story that's 200 pages. You're going to do 200 pages of, you know, maybe 10-page stories or chapters at a time. And once you get distance from those chapters, then you can start to tell whether maybe you're losing interest.
Right.
But listen, this whole idea of losing interest, I think sometimes it's we're confusing the hard work of comics with interest, right? And we think, oh, I've gotten to this part that's hard work. I must be losing interest. No, you didn't. You're just experiencing work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, I want to tell you how much your influence is on me, Brad, because I started this. And I now want to do a complete 180 because I think actually now, having heard what you have to say, Brad, I think I might argue with the fact that especially if you're at the beginning of the career and a 6-page story is feeling daunting, I actually now think the more I listen to Brad that it's probably better that you finish the damn thing no matter what, because there is tremendous value in finishing a project. Mm-hmm. And if it's 6 pages, great. That's the kind of thing you want. Was it terrible? Maybe it was. But you know what? It's done. You finished a thing. Yeah. Next one, do an 8-page story. Next one, do a 10-page story. And because what you want to do is it's hard to finish a thing, anything in life. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to start, do one page and go, well, that didn't work out, and back away.
Yeah.
And the problem is if you build up a pattern of that, your mind doesn't see it through to the next stages and you don't get practice at the next stages.
Right.
So I think I'm now going to do a complete 180 from my first answer and say, finish that 6-page story. Yeah. Might you be bored with it? Yes. Mm-hmm. But to Brad's point, it might be more process that you're bored with than the idea.
Yeah.
All right, Brad. So before we finish up, I want to have one more question, Brad, because this is a quick one, and I think it'll be a fun one.
Okay.
Carolina writes, hi there, Dave and Brad. Have you ever tried adding some kind of animation in your comics, like rain falling? If so, has it generated positive results, or does it take more time than it ends up benefiting?
Yeah, there's some apps that enable you to do that. You can add raindrops falling, or you can add snowflakes or sparkles. You can make things parts of the image, you know, move around and bounce around and stuff. I've experimented a little bit of that, And very quickly, I got to a point of kind of diminishing returns. In other words, it's kind of my social media following said, "Oh, that's neat," but it didn't light fire. It wasn't a game changer. Mm-hmm. And for the amount of time I was spending on it, for me, I felt I would much rather spend the time doing comics than that. Again, we keep coming back to this point, Dave, where we say, why do you feel the need to improve on comics? Comics are good just the way they are. They don't need to bounce. They don't need to move. They don't need to shake. They don't need to shimmy. You don't need a soundtrack. Comics are good just as they are. And my experience for doing that kind of proved that out. It was like, nah, that's kind of neat, but it's really not so much that I would actually put a lot of time and effort behind it. What did you ever try something like that?
Yeah, it's funny. My story is very similar to yours in that I have tried it. It was mm-hmm. perfectly cute when I did it.
Yeah.
It probably got a little wry smile out of most of the people that saw it. It got a wry smile out of me. Like you, I ended up thinking, no, I got into this because I wanted to be a cartoonist, not an animator.
Yeah.
And also the payoff wasn't so amazing that I was like, oh, this is worth it to do all these different, cells basically for this animation. And so, I would say if it's intriguing to you, try it. Go ahead. Try it. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong. Try it for 2, 3, 4, 5 comics. Who cares? I think you will find as you do it. I will say this. If you're considering doing it as like an ongoing basis, a permanent, like put a flag in the ground, like this comic is going to be animated all the time. Mm-hmm. I would suggest against it. But if you're into your comic now by, a few dozen pages, try it. Sure. Go ahead. Yeah. Have fun with it. And it's worth knowing how to do that tool in your toolbox. Or use that tool in your toolbox. But I think you will find, like Brad and I did, that it's neat. It gets a little wry smile and that's about it and go back to doing comics, right?
Yeah. And if you want to use it to spice up a social media post like I was doing here and there, keep it in your bag of tricks. You never know. The nice thing about experimenting on social media is, most times the thing that you post is going to be there for about 7 seconds. And if it doesn't catch fire, it's going to filter to the bottom of the tank and you yep. move on, you shrug yep. your shoulders. And if again, like Dave said, if you want to do this specifically to social media outreach and stuff, go nuts. But do track your returns on it. Keep a little notepad or do whatever you do to keep track and see if it's actually giving you good results. If it is, keep doing it. If not, find another better use for your time.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. All right, Brad, well, our next question comes in from Michael Sanford, who asks, "Hi, Brad and Dave. Been listening to you guys since I was a little teenager.
Oh.
Downloading Webcomics Weekly off TalkShoe with my terrible Australian internet."
I remember TalkShoe.
I don't remember terrible Australian internet, but I do remember TalkShoe, so yes. All right, so here's Michael's question. By the way, thank you, Michael. That means a lot to us. The fact that you have been listening to us since you were a teenager, I'm assuming that's last year?
We're so young ourselves. Because we're both very young, vital men.
Yeah, as a 21-year-old myself, I have no idea how that math even works out. All right, so here's Michael's question. The comics I've most enjoyed are indie comics, manga, and zines, so I've developed a taste for full-page black-and-white comics. Aha! Mm-hmm. I much prefer to read those types of comics on a tablet or occasionally in book form compared to vertical scrolling, single-panel wide, or phone-size comics. But the latter seems to be where the masses of reading are moving towards. What's your advice? Should I make webcomics in the format I already prefer and hope the smaller audience with similar taste finds it? Or should I stop being picky and grit my teeth and just work in a comics format that more people seem to prefer to read in, even if I don't think it's the ideal? Should I try to, quote, learn to love, quote, phone comics and consciously try and change my taste in comics format? Bradley Geiger, a teenager yourself, what do you think? What's the better way to go?
Oh, the answer to that question is yes. Listen, Michael, you're making this so hard on yourself. You're making it so difficult. You can do both. You can do both well. You can do that full page black and white zine style comic that, and let's say it's got five panels on the page. Then you take that full page and you crop panel one, then crop panel two, then crop panel three, then four, then five, and put those in a vertical scroll. Now you've got it formatted for phone. The only way that this is going to trip you up is if you're doing like real weird diagonal gutters. And if that's the case, then you do have to make a decision. Maybe there's a nice place you can meet in the middle where you keep some rectangle-based gutters and that can be much more easily clipped down into a vertical scroll. And Of course, as we mentioned on this show in the past, horizontal panels don't work super good in that format. So there's a small compromise you may have to make with yourself, or find, use that creativity that brought you to comics in the first place, and find a creative way to address that problem. But you can very easily do both. You're making this so much more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, I don't know that they're making it more complicated, but I think I see Brad's point, and I actually super echo Brad's point. Drawing in the format that you love, like, and respect and admire, which is that full page zine or indie or even traditional comic book format, is the way to go. Like, create it with that, or create it for that, but create it in such a way that it can be chopped up to share in those other formats that Brad mentioned. Mm-hmm. I think that's a smart way to go. And I will give you this tidbit of advice. For Instagram, Beth, who works in the studio with me, created a little template file that basically she can copy and paste that day's Sheldon into the template file and then move it, Brad, position it, save it out. Move it, position it again, save it out. Move it, position it again, save it out. I don't know if that's how you do it, Brad, but it's got all the crop lines on it. It's got the copyright line saved and the swipe line saved for the first panel, the copyright for the last panel. I guess what I'm saying is anything you can do to reduce steps, you know.
Right.
Brad and I are always about, you're going to be doing this for a long time, so figure out efficiencies as you work. And for me, that's been an efficiency, is to chop down a much bigger comic into little parcels by using a template to save it out, right?
Yep.
So that's one option, Michael, that you can use. And then I think you can, if you want, experiment with creating one the opposite way and then piecing it together as a page. I don't know that would work, but it might be a fun experiment.
You'd have to really call your shot, because then you're going to end up with weird gutters that are kind of a thick gutter here, a thin gutter there to make everything fit. You'd have to really call your shot, or use a really, really super simple layout like that Watchmen style nine panel grid that you could really make sure those things fit, but it would be possible, but you'd have to do a lot of pre-planning on that other end.
The only reason I mentioned that, Brad, is that when I went to go interview Scott McCloud for Stripped, and this was many moons ago, I don't remember what program he was using. I think it was probably InDesign. Maybe it was Illustrator. No, it was probably InDesign. But he was penciling out the layout, basically, of his book. This was the sculptor at the time. And he could, if he wanted to, will blow up a panel so that it would take up a half page, and then everything else would flow workflow-wise down to the next page, and then he would rearrange them on that one. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, I think they were, if I'm remembering correctly, I'd have to grab my copy of the sculptor off the shelf, but it was just an interesting way to build a book, which is that letting the moments of emphasis drive what the layout is. Now, some people might say, we'll do a thumbnail before you even go through all that rigmarole digitally, but I just thought it was a fun way for McCloud to do it, and I had never seen anybody do it that way before. But I think in general, though, Michael, to put a button on this quick question, I think Brad's right. You can have your cake and eat it too here.
Yes.
Create the indie zine format that you love, and then if you're thinking ahead, you'll still be able to slice it up for that vertical scroll that seems to be the hallmark of the day with phones.
I've got one last thought to add to this before we jump over to the next topic, and that's kind of an overview. If you're ever in a situation where you feel the pull between should I follow my heart or should I do something commercially successful, and that's really what's at the heart of this question,
yeah.
Always follow your heart.
Yes.
The commercial success will follow. But first, you need to follow your heart. So many bad moves have been made by people who are like, oh, I'm going to do something because I think this thing will be commercially successful. And to get proof of that, all you need to do is look through the first 10 years of webcomics from 2000 to like 2008, 2009. Everybody was doing video game comics, right?
Yes.
Because they're like, oh, that's what I got to do to be successful.
Right.
If your heart's not in it, if I would have tried to have done a video game comic, if my heart's not in that, I would have done terribly at that. So whenever you find yourself in the situation, don't ask yourself what would be popular, what would be commercially successful. Ask yourself, what's in my heart? What am I passionate about? Make that decision. Do the thing that you feel strongly about. And the creative success is not a given after that, because always, you know, I'm going to say it, you got to be doing good work. You have to right. bring your quality up, and you've got to be able to connect with that audience. But your first step is always going to be to follow your heart. And then if you can do good work after that, then the commercial success is going to follow.
I can't co-sign that strongly enough.
Yeah.
I think that's so true. How many knockoff versions of a Spider-Man or an
right.
Iron Man or what it, name the DC or Marvel character have we seen because they're like, this is what sells, so I'll create a superhero that does. Or to that point, format-wise, Michael, like you're asking here. The truth is we have seen very different formats succeed wildly because the passion was behind it. And
right.
the excitement of the author, and they were enjoying doing it, and you could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you had asked Brad and I 5, 6, 7 years ago if Check Please, the format for Check Please would work, as web cartoonists, we might have said, no, that's not, don't do it that way.
Yeah.
But she made it work excellently because the love was there, the passion was there. Another way of looking at it, if you had asked me before I had ever seen it, would History Comics have worked? I would have said, nah, how many people are history and comics readers and that kind of thing? Kate, because her passion and her love for history and her own innate sense of joy in it, it came through in the comics. So, of course, Hark of Vagrant worked.
Mm-hmm.
Brad, I'm sure you can think of other examples of people that found their passion.
Listen, Dave, guess what my son is reading as required reading over the summer to get ready for his first year in high school? It's a book called What If? Serious scientific answers to absurd hypothetical questions. You know who wrote it?
Randall Monroe. Yeah.
New York, not just Randall Monroe, New York Times bestselling Randall Monroe. Now, if you would have gone back to when he first put pen to paper and said, hey, and Randall comes up to me and says, oh, I got a good idea. I'm going to do a comic. It's all about math. I would have told him, nobody's ever going to read a comic about math and statistics and physics and stuff like that, X's and Y's and algebra. Nobody's going to read that. Turns out that that's where his heart really is. And he brought the quality because he's a very good writer. There's a reason he's a New York Times bestseller.
Right.
The guy can write his butt off. He brought the quality and the commercial success followed. And there's a story like that all over the place. People following their heart, bringing the quality, and the commercial success follows.
I'll throw another one out there. Jeff Smith, like that period, like you could not have imagined that Jeff Smith could have made a bone work by
right.
doing a black and white that he was selling out of the trunk of his car
yeah.
with comic book shops across the Midwest, you know, like. That was an impossible to like, no one would have said that's the career path
yeah.
to do. That's how you make it happen. And yet it's going to end up being one of the books that lasts 100 years from now. You know, like people
yes.
will read that long after I'm dead. And so, Michael, if you follow your passion, your love, your joy for comics, and you pour it into the work, the page formatting won't matter as much as
yes.
the passion behind it.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Brad, let me jump into our next question. This comes in from Daryl Manley, and Daryl writes, hello, gentlemen. I recently discovered the podcast from a link on the Sheldon website.
Oh,
look
nice.
At that, Brad.
Good job,
Sheldon,
Dave.
Sheldon, bringing in the listeners, Brad.
Yeah.
So, okay, I recently discovered the podcast from a link on the Sheldon website and quickly realized I needed to subscribe to the Patreon. Wow, this is everything we love to hear. Thank you, Daryl. That being said, I'd like to hear your thoughts on releasing an ebook while the content is still being released on the website or social media, so that a reader who doesn't want to wait to finish a story can just buy it in advance. I can think of what seemed to me to be obvious benefits in such a model if I'm making great content. But do you, Brad, see any downsides that Daryl is missing there?
Wow. So basically, Daryl has at least a 1 month buffer. He's got all that content done. He's dripping it out on his website, but he's got the whole thing in an ebook. And if you want to read to the end of the month, or he'll give you that ebook right now, and you can read the whole thing.
Right. That's how I read that. Yeah.
It's a brilliant idea. It's a really phenomenal idea. In fact, it's a groundbreaking idea, and I'll tell you why I know. Because I did this in 2013.
What a stinker.
What a terrible thing to say.
Oh, my God. You guys should see the amount of joy on Brad's face in being able to turn that phrase. Oh, he was so proud of himself.
I actually did this in 2013. And I will tell you from my personal experience, that will not necessarily be your personal experience. I found it to be an awful lot of extra work for not a lot of reward. In other words, I put this out. I may have even made it a Patreon reward. That's because 2013 into 2014, I was starting to transition into Patreon pretty solid.
How old is Patreon?
Patreon goes back to 2014, and I was in right at the very beginning.
I do remember that you were an early adopter.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. 2014. Wow. But all right.
This may have been a Patreon reward. It was not at that point. Of course, remember, Patreon was different in 2014, so don't get discouraged. Here's the deal. I don't want to discourage you from doing it and following this. If you can make it work, then make it work. I'm going to tell you, I did it, and I did not see a lot of reward. There wasn't a tremendous amount of interest. However, I don't want to discourage you. I would actually like you to continue that in today's internet publishing marketplace, because I'd love to see if somebody brought that idea around again and did something interesting with it. I am going to do nothing but encourage you to drive that even further, and then write back to us in 2 or 3 months and let us know how it's going, because I still think it's a good idea. It didn't work so well for me back in 2013, but that doesn't mean that it wouldn't be something that you should be experimenting with today.
Well, I want to jump back to the phrasing that Daryl made it clear that this is a story-based comic, not a gag-a-day, not a single panel.
Right.
And I want to make clear from the outset that I think it definitely wouldn't work if it's a gag a day or a single panel.
Yeah.
There's not much added value to getting, oh boy, I got all the whole month early, you know.
Yep.
But I want to say something kind of building off of what Brad said, and it might sound controversial, which is that a lot of people like that a story gets dripped out. They like the anticipation of, like, in the same way that your favorite show comes on a Friday night, you know?
Yeah.
For a lot of people, they like the feeling that this is a slowly evolving story, and then they read that page or that update, and then they're kind of ruminating on it. They're stewing on it, you know?
And they got something to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess I'm saying this as a process thing for reading. As a process, people like the fact, Brad, that it's staccato, that it's not one big chunk of text or story, that it comes at them bop, bop, bop over the course of weeks or days, right? And so I think that might be, Brad, why you didn't have great success with it back in the day. And I will offer this as a counter possibility for you, Daryl, which is that another thing that I do with Drive is that I release the pages as they come, right? Bang, 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 bang. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what I do periodically for Patreon backers is that I will gather them together as an ebook long before I print up the book, which usually takes about 2.5-3 years to put together the full book of Drive, those big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give them the ebook at a certain level, you know? And so for them, it's not an early read, but for no additional real effort on my part, it's a bonus, compact form to reread sections they've already come to like before they get the physical book. Thoughts on that, Brad?
No, I like that idea. And I do think this would be a pitch perfect Patreon reward. this idea of having the download at the beginning of the month for a story-based comic. This sounds tailor-made for Patreon. I think it's something that I think Daryl's going to find success with this. If I had to bet, I'd say that this is going to be a winner.
Do you? Okay, so yeah. I guess what I'm saying is that I'm not sure that it's worth the extra trouble of getting all the story done early. What I was saying was that the path of less resistance is to create the story, bop, 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 page by page, week by week, and then release the ebook.
Okay, wait, why but Daryl's already a month ahead. All he's got to do is keep going.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
You know, or right. let's say Daryl's not a month ahead and he wants to try this. He takes a month off, works on it. Now he's a month ahead for the following month, and all he's got to do once you get to the being a month ahead is keep going at a steady pace.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a very related question, Brad, yeah. Which is part of the charm of webcomics and our presence in our reader's life the fact that it is a frequent thing that we drop into their life and not a once a month thing? Is that part of the charm and part of the
really
relationship that we have built with them?
Listen, that was if you're talking to me in 2005, the answer is unequivocally yes. Today, I don't know that. I think that we still have that section of our readership for whom that is absolutely the case. Whether that is the overriding, purveying mindset, I don't know. I would be surprised if you could do a poll. And ask that question, I would be surprised if the majority of your readers felt that way.
Huh.
And by the way, your readership might be also very different than my readership.
That's true. Yeah.
Everybody's got a different group of people, you know, so it might be different for you. But for my readers, I would be surprised if they said something like that. I think they like the fact that it's something that they can enjoy all month long. But at the same time, if I offered them all of this stuff at the beginning of the month in one big package, I think there's a good number of them that would be just thrilled with that.
I will politely disagree with you. And I think your own actions prove me out, which is that you release more than anyone I know, more exclusives and Patreon things all week long, all month long. And I think that has helped to build a permanent relationship with these people in your life and in their life. Mm-hmm. That this Evil Inc. stuff, the Brad Geiger comics are coming up, bop, 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 bop. Not like, hey, I'm Brad Geiger. Remember me from 6 months ago? Here's 48 pages. See you 6 months from now. Hey, is the pandemic over? I'm Brad Geiger again. Here's another 48 pages.
Well, you.
Oh, another pandemic. Hi, I'm Brad Geiger.
Funny how that happened. Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong about that. That being said, one of the only reasons that I do it that way is that I can't get a month ahead. You know, it's physically impossible for me to do that. And sometimes, like the past couple of weeks, and I've said this on the show before, there have been weeks where I just don't update Evil Inc. because there's just too many other things, and I got to focus on some other stuff. So sometimes, you know, if I was in Daryl's shoes, I don't think I would hesitate to pull the trigger on that. And one of the reasons I'm not is I just cannot get a month ahead like I did at that one time.
I will say this, that I once had a buffer of 2 months on Sheldon. I think I've told this story on the podcast before, Brad. You can stop me if I have. I once had a buffer of 2 months, and then Gloria and I bought our first house. And that's twice this podcast that house has come up. I bought that house, and I was like, I'm doing all my own plumbing. I'm going to do all my own painting.
Boy.
Also, because you're super cash poor with that first time you buy a house. You know, it's like, hey, who wants ramen all year?
Yeah.
And so I painted the entire exterior and interior of that house by myself. And even though it was not a large house, it takes forever, especially if you're a perfectionist like me. I lost that buffer and I've never gotten it back since buying that house. never gotten it back. So I will say this just as a general thing for everyone. If you have a buffer, keep it. God.
Yeah.
Keep it if you can.
That's a good thing to have. So listen, Dave, we've got time for one more question. And this one comes in from our friend and Patreon backer, Jeff Lancon, who says, In a previous podcast, you each pitched ideas for new comics that you might develop in different genres. Remember, Dave, you pitched, I think, a superhero comic, and I pitched a sci-fi comic.
OK. Can I be an old man for a minute? I actually don't remember what our pitches were. What were they?
I pitched a Space Pirates, and you had something about, was it dinosaurs and cowboys? It was a cowboy and
the kaiju one. Yeah, but what was the science fiction one you said? There was one.
My science fiction idea was Space Pirates.
Didn't I have one about like a power that if you used it, it would, wait, I forget what mine was.
You anyway, did this, talk about that too.
What was that one? I forget that one.
Do you think I was listening to you?
The only reason, because this will come into the point that I'm going to make to answer this question, but okay, never mind. Go ahead. Keep going.
But anyway, we did. That was a show a little while back that we talked about that. We both pitched comics in one another's genre.
Right.
But Jeff goes on to say, I found your character concepts interesting, but I was hoping that you could have carried the discussion a little further into how you would develop a story with them. I think a lot of creators, myself included, are able to come up with what they think are interesting characters. I believe the challenge is in the next step. Would you go through the seven major story types and see which one would work for your character? Would you try to come up with an ideal antagonist for your hero and see what would develop? I realize there isn't one right answer, but I would like to see how Dave and Brad would approach the challenge of building a story around what they think is an interesting character concept. So first of all, Jeff is making a big assumption. He's assuming we start with character. And we've talked about on the show in the past, that's one way that you can start, but it's not necessarily the only way. Definitely not the way I work, but Dave, let's take his bigger question and say, if you were to take that pitch to the next step and develop a story, what would that be like?
Okay, so yeah, one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you up front what our idea was, and this actually goes to Jeff's question, is that one of the reasons why I don't even remember this is that for us, Brad, it was just sort of a fun exercise and we hadn't put any thought beyond that. You know what I mean?
Right.
We were just like brainstorming essentially. And so I get what Jeff's requesting is he would like us to go through the whole process of like, but what's next, right?
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is the counterpoint there is that we were just having fun coming up with a initial pitch, you know, an initial idea. And so part of that is that any good storyteller will come up in their own mind with 100 pitches a year for different possibilities. Brad throws them at me all the time. I throw them at Brad all the time.
Right.
And we go, oh, that would be a good story. Yeah, that would be fun. All right. Yep. Yeah. Never going to do it. No, I'm not going to do it either. All right, great.
Put it in the book.
Put it in the book. Yeah, exactly. And I also want to say, Brad, to your question about that Jeff's making a big swing that we start our stories with characters.
Yeah.
I actually think that's really true. And this goes back to the point that I made earlier in the podcast that I am a macro storyteller more than I am a micro storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
For me, my shorthand of macro micro is more the emotions, the mood, the personal journey of a character, whereas macro is the bigger world, the politics, the economics, the major pieces moving across a massive war chessboard, that kind of thing, right? So I've told this story before about how Walter Mosley, who wrote the E.Z. Rollins stories, the detective stories.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you haven't read them, they're amazing stories. Mosley's an amazing writer. But he once started a story, Brad, where he said all he knew was that this character had a massive scar running down his face.
Yeah.
And he said, I had to know how that character got that scar.
But he had no idea who the character was.
Right.
Right.
A whole novel came from that moment, right?
A
that
scar.
Crystallization of like, I see the character in my mind's eye, and I see that he has a huge scar down his face, probably from a knife.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to create the whole backstory to it. And that's how one of the E.Z. Rollins stories got started, right? And to me, I'm the opposite way. I like stories that are big chess piece moves, you know, like an empire. For me, I'll back up Jeff and tell you how I started with Drive. For me, a lot of people, my readership of Drive, love the characters. They love how goofy they are. They like that they're sort of Muppety friendly and that kind of stuff, right? But for me, one of the reasons that I wanted to tell that story, Drive, was I wanted the idea that humanity in the wider... I had a couple competing story ideas that I wanted to get out into a story. One was that humanity's self-identifying as being a truly special species and unique in the universe would be kind of held to account in this story, because we see that other aliens have created cooler technology, that they're further along, that either their moral, their art, their political, their scientific systems are better, right? So humanity's kind of in the mix among other aliens, but not necessarily the best, right? That's one of the things I wanted to do. I wanted to talk about that even though history doesn't repeat, it rhymes. And so in my story, the Spanish Empire was once again ruling the Earth. It wasn't the American Empire that was still Pax Americana 1,000 years from now. Now was the Spanish Empire back again, right? And the third idea that I really wanted to communicate was, what if you took a power source and a source of political power like the House of Saud has in Saudi Arabia, oil, mm-hmm. and extrapolated an entire empire based on that? So in my story, the human empire is ruled by one familia from Spain, and their power is the drive that they control starship travel. And so they're like the House of Saud. One cousin runs the bank. One cousin runs the military. One cousin runs the judicial system. One cousin runs the empire itself. And so like the House of Saud, it's riddled with problems because you might have a cousin that's an idiot. You might have another cousin that's power hungry. All the traditional family problems that can happen are happen and drive. But for me, then it was like, okay, let's populate this story with characters. And so I'm working in a totally reverse way, Jeff, than what you were coming at with that mm-hmm. question. But I think it gives you an idea of how I create stories. Brad, now for you, with Evil Inc., you had a few kernel characters that you knew you loved from Greystone Inn that right. were working. And you're like, oh, there's something here. But the broader story is really what sparked it with you, I think, right?
Right, right. Again, it was not character for me. It was concept. It was the concept of a corporation run by supervillains. Once I took that sentence and ideated it, and said, okay, I've got a corporation run by supervillains. What next? And then I put one existing character into that building and had her meet somebody. And then the next person that she met and the next person and the next person. That's how that kind of started to sprout and grow.
Right.
But it was, again, it had nothing to do with character, and it was an idea. And so today, again, I know what the question is about. It's like, oh, he'd like us to go back to those story pitches and watch me do a whole story based on space pirates. Well, I'm never going to do that because that's a lot of work. and seriously, if I was going to do that, I would be writing the story and you'd find out about it later. I can't do it here because, again, if I tried to do that for you, it would be 10% of what the actual thing actually is. So it's much more useful for me to tell you how I ideate stories in real time.
And I'll jump in here, Brad, because Jeff, if you haven't done it yet, I'm sorry to cut you off, Brad, but if you haven't done it yet, Jeff, check out the writer's room sessions that we do for pro tips are exclusive for Patreon backers.
Yes.
Because this is Brad and I sitting down for 20, 30, 40 minutes and really taking a germ of an idea and exploring all the ways it could be expressed to arrive at the best possible way that advances the story and gets a joke out or an entertaining moment out. You know, I think, Brad, that's the closest to what Jeff might want from us, which is, how do you guys do what you do? You know, and that those writer rooms are really a peek into yes anding, withholding judgment, and trying to find the best possible version of an idea, don't you think?
And not letting yourself off the hook. You know, saying, okay, this is good, but it's got to be better. And then this is better, but it's got to be great. You know,
and you'll hear Brad and I in those sessions, like acknowledging our intuition, saying, like, now, Brad, I know that's a good idea, but something in me says there's a better version of that. And then we'll struggle for 5 or 10 minutes and sometimes we'll find a better idea, you know, and it's really satisfying to know that we pushed through. We didn't just say, it's good enough, you know.
Right.
And so I would highly recommend that. But as to how we would develop a whole story. Go ahead, Brad.
For me, it comes down to this. I think I've talked about this on a previous show and I really went deep on it, but just to cover this again, what I do is I start out with a character. Once I've got my world set up and I'm going to write a story, okay? I need to have somebody who has a want. If I've got somebody who has a want, and if I have a barrier to that want or need, and there's a difference between a want and a need, and you can play with that too. It, like Mick Jagger said, sometimes you don't get what you want, you get what you need. Once I've got a character with a want, and once I've got an obstruction to that want, I've got a story. Okay? So because it becomes an attempt to the want and a reattempt and a finally addressing that want and finally either achieving it or not achieving it. Yep. And most of my stories start with an A-B storyline where I've got basically two characters, each with their own want, probably unrelated. And the story will keep switching back and forth between tracking this character's want, and then we're going to go talk about this character's want. And then we're going to keep switching back and forth until at the end of the chapter, I like to try and have both of those two storylines collide and both of the wants go running into each other. And maybe what happens with character A achieving their goal or not achieving it affects character B. And then once I have that set up, I can make all of these storylines, all these chapters fit into a bigger storyline that I have outlined. So that says, okay, we've got to take this relationship. It's got to be this at the beginning, and it's got to be this at the end. Mm-hmm. How I get there, and we've said this on the show before, I'll start with a beginning and an end. That's all I need. The middle, that happens through writing. I don't care about the middle. I want to know what my beginning is. I want to know what my end is. I want to know what my want is. And whether I achieve that want or the character achieves the want. But the middle, that's plotting a route between Chicago and Los Angeles. I don't care how you get there. I just want it to be the most interesting trip possible.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. One little bit of iconography that's helped me in my story writing, and sometimes you can draw this out and post it up on your desk. Mm-hmm. You draw a stick figure on the left.
Yep.
A triangle in the middle, mm-hmm. and a crown on the right.
Yes.
That's your character. They've got to get over that mountain or that barrier in the middle. They've got to mm-hmm. somehow scale it or get around it, tunnel through it, however they're going to do it, blow it up, to get to the treasure on the other side, which is their want, right?
Yes.
Now, basic storytelling techniques, you can have someone who is in opposition or in foil or in parallel with that. Mm-hmm. An oppositional one would be someone who is standing on the other side of the mountain, has the crown, wants to be the character. That's just a metaphor for how, you know, different parallel lives. And some people, there might be two characters both trying to get over the mountain to get to that treasure.
It's a race.
There could be. Yeah, exactly. So there's a thousand ways to structure that story. And for that, a book like Save the Cat, mm-hmm. or Save That Cat, rather, which is that screenwriting mm-hmm. Book. It's been a bestseller forever now. It's like 10, 15 years been. And it's got great ideas on how to structure out your story, which I think is what you're looking for, Jeff.
Yeah.
But to go back to the beginning of the point, you can, as we did in that brainstorming session, start a story based on characters. And that would be like a Napoleon Dynamite kind of movie, right? Mm-hmm. Or to Brad, and what Brad and I did with our stories is to start more from a concept first. And that's more like a Men in Black movie, right?
Yeah.
Where Men in Black, you could have had, frankly, 20 different kinds of characters populating those two central cast members.
Yes.
And it still kind of would have worked as a story because the basic thrust of Men in Black is not really their journey. It is a little bit, but not mm-hmm. really. The main enjoyable thrust of Men in Black is the concept that there are aliens walking around us and they're hidden. And, you know, there's this agency that has to kind of half serve them, half fight against them, that kind of thing. And so, so Jeff, it sounds like you are more character interested. And so for that, I would say check out Save That Cat and mm-hmm. And do check out the writer's room sessions that Brad and I do over at Pro Tips. Because I think you'll find the ideation structure that we use is probably helpful to you in terms of how we get to a better idea.
Absolutely. And with that, it's my delight to tell you that you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my dear friend, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my close personal friend, Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Cloud theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media. And of course, our sponsor for this week, Wacom, over at wacom.com.
And if you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. And you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one.
That's right. We got one here from Jem S., who gives us a lovely five-star review over at Apple Podcasts and says, "It's my favorite podcast. I really can't recommend Comic Lab enough. This podcast is packed with actionable and relevant information about building an independent career in the arts. Plus, Comic Lab is one of the most entertaining podcasts ever. Brad and Dave's excitement and enthusiasm for creating comics is a delight to listen to. This podcast is so funny. I look forward to it every Thursday.
Thank you.
The knowledge I've gained from Comic Lab has helped me create a business plan. Thanks a ton, guys. P.S. And this one you'll appreciate, Brad. P.S. To the reviewers who complained about Brad's laugh, who hurt you? Brad, don't listen to them. You have a wonderful, genuine laugh. Aww. Don't change it.
That was extra special nice. Thank you so much.
I gotta be honest. I am always, to me, someone who doesn't enjoy Brad's laugh is like someone who doesn't like enjoy ice cream. It's like, what's wrong with you? What's going wrong in your life that you can't enjoy a man that's chuckling with sheer joy? I am going to say, though, Comic Lab is made possible by your support over at patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice, patreon.com/comiclab.
Dave, that banana water, like a banana, if you were to like hold that and let it ferment or ripen, would it have gotten sweeter over time like a banana?
I hadn't thought about that. Put it in a cup and let it just sit on your counter in the sun and let it slowly blacken and get squishy.
Yeah, and then you could make banana bread out of it. You know, I don't know whether you do that in your house, but at the Geiger house, if a banana has been sitting around for too long, then it starts to get brown, and instead of throwing it away, my wife makes banana bread. So, and I love her banana bread so much, I'll always hide a couple bananas over in the side of the kitchen until they go brown, and then I bring them out, and it's like, oh, look at that. Nobody ate that banana. And then I get banana bread.
I love any story that reveals what a 9-year-old you are.
except there's been a few times I forgot where I hit them, and then I got to wait so the flies lead me to them.